Welcome to the Angry Admins Podcast for May 14th, 2007, episode 27. Hey everybody, welcome back. We are the Angry Admins and this is our podcast.
It is.
The Angry Admins Podcast. I'm Joe Bibby.
And I'm Ryan Necessary.
And we are coming to you from Houston, Texas. This week on the show, we're going to do our standard of talking about some of the latest news in tech, business tech, home tech, and basically whatever we feel like talking about.
What the heck tech?
And then for our main story this week, we have something interesting. In these days of data bloat, the question is, what do you delete and what do you keep?
Delete it all.
So tune in for that and see what our opinions are. I think we're going to disagree and you may find it interesting.
Joe's wrong.
But let's get things started with the latest news. First thing on the list, we have Microsoft and SanDisk teaming up to provide desktop apps on your thumb drive.
Mm.
Now, this is exciting for me because, well, U3 technology is the current leader and it's pretty much a total failure. It doesn't work. It seems like it's always crashing or not booting correctly or whatever. I do have pretty good luck with the portable apps, but those are all kind of freeware that are open source and just kind of hacked to be able to boot or to be able to launch from a thumb drive. But imagine something like Outlook running from your thumb drive, or I don't know what's planned, but I'm excited about having full Word on my thumb drive
from
an official Microsoft standard. So
that'd be nice.
You know, they are the biggest game out there, so having them supporting it is a good thing. So, you know, not much else to say there, but interesting to see what happens and if Microsoft spreads beyond SanDisk or if they keep that united front.
It's kind of funny that they're only now able to do it now that we have 2 gigabyte thumb drives. It's like, how big right. is this going to be?
Yeah, that's probably really what it took, though. I mean, you know, their software is pretty bloated because they're supporting 10 years of...
You'll have a keychain of thumb drives, like one's PowerPoint, one's Word.
Maybe there'll be different colors. Yeah, logos.
Yep. That'd be kind of sweet.
That'd be terrible.
In a sucky way.
Yeah. So some news from Google this week, right?
Yes. Google has declared that after intense searching and deep analysis, it has been determined that 1 in 10 web pages contain dangerous malware or spyware. Now,
boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, so 10% of the entire internet is, or at least of the web, is, you know, potentially dangerous to your computer.
Right.
Now, that being said, it's probably not 10% of things that are regularly visited.
Right.
There's a lot of hacker pages out there, pages that are phishing sites, you know, things that aren't regularly trafficked. So if you added all those up, then yeah, it's probably 10% of the internet is probably doing something bad to you. And they didn't really qualify exactly what it was, whether it was just, you know, maybe not horrible spyware, not terrible viruses, but just like stuff that would attach to your browser.
Right.
I mean, which I consider all of it horrible, but I don't want any of it. But they didn't really grade, you know, how bad it was for your PC. But a lot of that, you know, we know is out there, and they're trying to determine all the new vectors for attacks on PCs, whether it be browser-based or, you know, email-based or, you know, social engineering, things like that. So this is, I guess, Google's trying to go with their little, like, don't be evil model.
Right.
And they're like, these are the bad guys. Look, over there.
Yeah. Instead of just using their search technology to make money, they're actually, like, doing something that helps everybody.
Yeah.
Which, well, you know, I mean, they do a lot of helpful things. But this did freak me out at first because I was like, 1 in 10 websites. Oh, no. And then you explained it to me.
Yeah. So it's
my
not,
feeble mind.
As with any news article, it sounds worse than it really was.
Yeah.
You know. So,
yeah,
that was that.
So, next story is related to the Apple iPhone, something we haven't talked about in a while, which is probably a good thing because we kind of hyped it up a little bit too much when it first was announced.
It was all Joe.
It was all me and you a little bit.
Yeah, it was pretty sweet.
Anyway, so after the reality distortion field fled from our site and, you know, we realized some of the faults of it, one of the big faults was lack of third-party software.
Right.
And in a shareholders phone-in meeting, Steve Jobs this week said that they were wrestling with the idea of allowing external developers to create software for the iPhone. So this is like the first crack in the armor of the iPhone. And to me, even if it takes a year for this to happen, it's a necessary thing. I don't think the iPhone's going to sustain over the long term if other people can't develop for it.
Yeah.
So this is good news. And the other thing is, this is really, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like this is the first time we've really heard Jobs and company changing their mind based on user demand.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, really, if you look at the Macs, pretty much all the OS X type stuff, there's not, I mean, yeah, there's third-party stuff, but it's not prevalent.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the majority, the good stuff is Apple, you know, Final Cut Pro, the iLife series. And I'm starting to use more and more third-party stuff now that I'm on it all the time, but I think it's different. It's a different world than the phone world, you know, and
there could be some danger there of people like hacking their phones. Sure. And, I mean, who knows what could happen there.
But that could happen. I mean, Windows mobile devices have been doing this for years, and the Symbian OS have been doing it. I mean, my phone, I can install all kinds of stupid stuff on it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So, I think this is a good sign that they maybe Apple is starting to listen a little bit. You know, previously they've kind of been in the, we know what's best for you, so we don't listen to you camp.
But when someone's paying $600, maybe you should listen to them a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. So it'll be interesting. I don't know. I'm sure it's not going to be ready release date for third-party software. But if it happens by next year, you know, maybe I'll start thinking about getting the phone again if it drops a third in price too.
Right.
But anyway, enough about Apple. What else do we got?
So the Department of Defense said that they're about to start blocking what they called popular internet entertainment sites. So we can only assume that they're talking about YouTube, Google Video, stuff like that.
Anything good.
Yeah, anything entertaining. We're gonna make sure that, you know, we have no fun at work because we're the DOD. I think what was spurring this, they said they just don't have the bandwidth.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when you're talking about as many people as they put into one building, like you take the Pentagon, which is like the size of a small city.
Right.
And everyone at 8:30 a.m. hits, you know, YouTube at the same time, then that's going to be bad.
Yeah.
So this comes, you know, a few weeks after they had said that they're going to start cracking down on the soldiers' blogs, too, that they're telling that all the soldiers, if you're blogging, you know, from the battlefield or really from anywhere, that you have to run all of your stuff through your commanding officers and it has to be approved, you know, so no more like slice of life or, you know, I'm homesick, and then they're not going to let any of that kind of message out to the public. So that's not great. But anyway, more government pseudo censorship.
Yeah. Well, is it really though? I mean, they're, you know, companies have been blocking internet access for a long time now.
Yeah.
You know, they block attachments. They block, I mean, where we work, we block webmail access.
Well, I would have to make a distinction between the censoring or the controlling of the personal emails and blogs of the soldiers versus the blocking of YouTube.
Yeah.
I think those are different issues. And I can, from a network standpoint, I definitely agree that sometimes you just don't have the bandwidth for everybody to stream, you know, all kinds of junk. People, you know, pictures of their cat peeing on the carpet, you know, whatever. I mean, it's just, you don't have time for all that. But
you know, but even the soldiers, I mean, I don't want to get into too much politics on here, but even the soldier thing, to me, and maybe this is just because I, you know, I have some relatives and stuff who are in the force, but in the forces, and to me, it's like when you're a soldier, like until you're out, you're working for them, you know, 24/7,
right?
And they need to have like absolute control over you if you're going to be a soldier. When it comes to release of information on the battlefield,
to I can me, see having it was touchy.
Yeah.
You know, like, tomorrow we're going into Fallujah.
Yeah.
You know, so well, that's...
You can't really have that stuff out on the internet for everyone to see.
And that was one of the arguments, is that it's all... Basically, you know, that the blogs become intel that the internet uses.
Exactly.
At least that's their argument.
Yeah, and whether that really happens or not, I don't know. But, you know, and well, anyway, that's enough of that.
Yeah.
We'll move on to something less serious.
Next.
So, next thing, on Ars Technica this week, I think it was... we had a demonstration of Comcast demonstrating 150 megabits per second cable modem.
Sweet.
How sweet is that?
That's nice.
We're getting what? Normal cable modem, maybe 6-7 megabits at most. Yeah. Maybe more like 5.
Yeah.
30 times the speed.
That's pretty rocking.
That's very sweet. And they're saying that that's even without having to upgrade to fiber, that they'll be able to support, you know, up to 100 megabits about without fiber. And then with fiber in the back end, you know, it's pretty much unlimited.
Well, I have people coming to me now pretty regularly at work, which is another issue, but... yeah, so at home, should I get a gigabit switch? Should I get a gigabit network in my PC? It's right. Like, well, I mean, are you moving data files around your house or your home network? And if the answer is no, then why be any faster than your weakest link, which is your internet access?
So. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, do you need gigabit if all you have is a desktop plugged into a cable modem? No.
Negative.
You don't.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So that was pretty interesting. And then the final story is another cable story. We have Comcast again. They're in the news a lot lately. I think they're just trying to build up market share. But anyway, they're talking about working on simultaneous movie release service. Right. And this is something I think that you are definitely interested in. I mean, we've talked about it on the show in the After Five segments and how we need, you know, DVDs being released the same time as they're in theaters.
Right. I hate the movie theater. Without getting into it, there's so many reasons why.
Oh yeah,
it sucks.
And what this service is, this is using the on-demand service of cable companies.
Right.
But here's the catch: they want to charge not $10, not $15, $30 to $50 per film for an on-demand one-time viewing. And their justification is, okay, we know that you're going to have more people looking at this, so we'll upcharge it so that you'll be doing like a 5 or 6 person viewing.
Because they think my neighbors and my friends will be over if,
I guess,
on release day, we're all watching Spider-Man 3 in my house.
Right. That's the idea. Yeah. So, I mean, what it shows is the technology is there to be able to roll this out immediately.
Right.
And, I mean, they're doing it on demand. They're doing it digitally how theaters should be doing it already. Hmm. And the theaters are trying to catch up. They're still doing reel-to-reel stuff. But the big news to me in this story, you know, this isn't really tech-related, but it's that the major theater companies are telling anyone in Hollywood, if you are a production studio and you do this, we will not play your movies in our theaters. And that's just like, you know what? I hope everybody does it then.
You know, I think that's a fight they're going to lose.
Yeah.
Because invariably there's going to be people that pay $8 and go to the theater.
Right.
So if it's not their theater, then that's more money that they just lost.
Exactly.
So.
Well, and instead of trying to make their experience better, which is getting progressively worse, and we're paying more and more money, instead of, you know, making it better, they're just like, no, we're the first ones out. You have no other choice. So you have to come to us.
Mm-hmm.
And then if somebody else tries to, you know, get in on that game, then they just block them out. I don't know. It's something that's, if we're already seeing one story about it maybe happening, I would say within 3 to 4 years this will be happening. And I'm so glad that it is.
Yeah. I think in 10 years there will be no movie theaters, I think.
You think so?
Okay, no, I take it back. There will be. But they'll be showing things like Rocky Horror Picture Show, Grindhouse, Star Wars. It'll be the cult classics. You know what I'm saying? It'll be that cult classic experience that you want to go to the theater where people are shouting at the screen. But for new stuff, you're going to watch it at home.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is.
Yeah, I mean, if the only way they're going to stay in business is if they add new value instead of subtracting value like they're doing right now. So, yeah, they're going to have to do something to fix it because I'm becoming less and less likely to go to the theater, and now they're just being supported by people between the ages of 13 and 18.
Right.
So.
And if I want to see it before opening day, I can already do that.
Yeah.
Now it might have Japanese subtitles, but yeah, it's going to be there somewhere.
Yeah.
Angry Admins and his partners do not condone the downloading of illegal movies. This week for our main story, we're going to talk about whether to delete your files or whether to save your files in perpetuity. I'm a big believer in one stance of the argument, and I think Joe's going to take the counter argument.
Yes.
So, Joe, why don't you go first?
The reason that this story is even relevant now is because hard drives are getting so big. I mean, it's you can buy... I just saw that Buffalo just released a 3-terabyte TeraStation.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of data.
Yeah, I think you can get like a 320-gig drive for like $80 yeah. now, something like that.
So it's easy to keep everything. And I'm becoming more and more of the mentality of why delete it if you have room to store it? Gmail kind of started me down that road.
Yeah.
But, you know, we just have so much on our computers these days. Family photos, family videos. I mean, you know, you got your digital copy of when your baby was first taking his steps, and that's only on your PC. So, you know, you're going to keep that, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, it's easy that you could keep every document, you know, stuff I wrote in high school I still have on my computer. So it's like, but do I really need to keep that? Well, no, but... what if I want to go back and look at it and see how bad I was at writing back then?
Right.
So I'm kind of, I think, on the stance that it's good to keep it. And we'll get into more of that when we talk about specifics later. Mm-hmm. But why don't you give your overview of how you feel?
I feel, my term is bit pollution.
Yeah.
And I don't want this stuff floating around forever.
Right.
You know, on my computers. Some of it potentially damaging. You know, if somebody takes a picture of me in my underwear, then that needs to be purged from the internet. I don't want any copies that could be used against me if I run for congressman. But there's other things that, you know, aside from like tax records and things like that, just the effort involved in wading through all that data
mm-hmm.
year after year, it always grows. And then eventually, like when you die, you're going to leave behind petabytes of crap that someone else is going to have to, you know, probably your kids or someone's going to have to look at that and go, I wonder if there's anything useful in there, or should we just whack it all?
Right.
I mean, do they bury your hard drives with you?
Yes. Take it with you, man. No, so I'll have to put my position in context. I'm not of the, you know, I think a few years back somebody thought the idea of recording everything in your life to one like life drive type thing. No. Not everything needs to be kept, but I would say most. So there's that. Now let's get into a little more specifics now that you guys kind of know how we feel. The time you so there's kind of this whole concept of, well, if you have all this data, you have to keep it very organized, right?
Yeah.
Because you want the important stuff to be easy to find,
right?
So if I have, you know, stuff I wrote in high school, well, that's not going to be on the top of the list. So that's going to be buried like 3 folders down somewhere in the archives.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also the other side of that. I mean, yeah, I spend a lot of time organizing it, but how much time do you spend, you know, going through and deleting every possible thing that you don't need?
Right. So, I mean, yeah, it is a time thing. So it's like the time lost searching through it versus the time lost deleting and deciding keep or not keep.
And I think there have been a lot of advances in the whole making it easy to find things.
Right.
So I'll give a couple examples. Gmail. Before Gmail existed, I probably only kept email that went back 6 months to a year.
Mm-hmm.
Everything older than that, I deleted.
Yeah.
Now, I've got emails in my Gmail account. I mean, you know, it goes way back. And I'm able to find whatever I need. I think I can only think of 2 or 3 times where I've searched for an old email and not been able to find it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm able to label things, you know, you can search by username, you can search by email address, you can, you know, type in their email address and then type, you know, say I'm looking for the email what my mom sent me last year about Mother's Day ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So I can type my mom's email address and then like Mother's Day, boom, there's all the emails. And then, you know, I still have to spend a few minutes going through and finding it, but it's there.
And here's the thing, though. I agree search is key. Search is like the linchpin that makes keeping all that worthwhile, because that's how you're going to find it, is with some sort of search tool. Now, Google, i.e. Gmail,
yes,
is being run by the masters of search.
Right.
You know, so when you search through your several years of Gmail, it finds it instantly. Now, you take Billy Bob Johnson in the Midwest, and he's got 10 years worth of junk on his PC, and he's stuck with crappy Windows search, find, .. you know, and he's got like hundreds of gigs of stuff, and it takes all night to find it mm-hmm. because Microsoft is not the king of search.
True.
So,
but he should be on a Mac anyway. okay. Well, I won't go there.
But I think the searching is the key to it. Yeah. But it has to be searched like so efficiently, and we're not there on the home system yet.
I would agree with you. You know, Mac with its Spotlight came a long way, and it's definitely far from perfect on the Mac too. I mean, it's, you know, there's still a lot of time spent in. You know, you have to create a good system mm-hmm. for specific things. You know, things like email now are easy to search. Things like photos, you've got Picasa, you've got iPhoto, two very solid apps on both platforms that make managing your photos very, very easy. You know, I've had a digital camera for, almost 10 years now. Mm. So I have a lot of digital photos. And I'm able to easily search through them with, actually, Picasa is really the better app of the two. So it's like apps are slowly catching up on the things that have the most media, the most glut, you know, the most bit pollution, as you say. Mm-hmm. But one area that, you know, isn't total failure right now is like documents. I mean, it's really up to me still to efficiently organize my documents in folders and have file structures that I set up. And really, before Picasa and things came out, that's how I did my photos. Mm-hmm. Every time I would take pictures, I would have to take 10 or 20 minutes, you know, name the folder, put it in the correct subfolder. But to me, it was worth it.
Mm-hmm. To kind of derail the conversation briefly, Google Desktop Search.
Ah, fired.
Yes or no? Negative?
And here's why I don't like Google Desktop Search. Well, for one, it just never seems to work. I have a lot of problems with it crashing. And two, the whole they try to make you still use the web browser thing just doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
Like your search results are in a web browser. If you're going to make a desktop app, make it a desktop app.
Plus, how creepy of a feeling is that?
Yeah.
It's like, can anyone see this?
I mean, it's one thing for them to see all of my emails.
Yeah.
And, you know, they say they don't search through them. And, you know, I'm not really saying anything important in emails, but all my documents and the fact that I can make those searchable on the web even.
It's scary.
You know, maybe it's just I'm getting too old and I'm too paranoid. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people younger than me are just going to be like, you crusty old guy. You don't need to worry about that. I mean, Google Desktop Search is trying to do what we need for documents, but it just doesn't quite work
mm-hmm.
for me.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think the big issue here, and I started to get into this already, I got a little ahead, is that I think the idea of, for me, keeping everything is a context-sensitive topic.
Okay.
So like I would not keep every little animated GIF that I downloaded over the last 10 years,
right?
I mean, or like every Penny Arcade comic I downloaded that I enjoyed, or every version of my website I've had over the last 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to keep that, you know. Yeah. It would be neat to have.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess in some ways I agree with you that you don't need to keep everything.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I guess that's for me. I mean, I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I'm still in favor of the aggressive cleanup, mm-hmm. but I'm coming out of the mentality of, I mean, part of it stems from, as a home user, paying for hard drives. It's mm-hmm. like, man, these hard drives are so expensive. In the old days. Yes,
right.
They were.
Right.
You know, so it's like, well, we need to, you know, really be aggressive and clean up this junk and back it up to disk, CD-ROMs, or whatever. And the other half of that thing in my head that causes this behavior is doing backups. Because mm-hmm. sysadmins, you know, half of our job is backing up user data.
Right.
You know,
right.
And I see there are times either when I'm restoring or just basically looking at people's files without their permission for no good reason.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what we do.
That's what we do, right? So, and I'm looking at all this stuff and I'm like, man, look at these MP3s.
Yeah.
No one even likes this band.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah. And I see all the stuff that people keep and I see how old it is. And there's, like if you do a JDisk report
mm-hmm.
from the JGoodies site, which is, by the way, a great tool, you can, it'll show you like a pie chart of percentage of these files that are over a year old, over 5 years old, 10 years old. And there's just so much stuff out there that doesn't need to be there. And it's my job to keep backing all of that mm-hmm. up, you know? So every time a user gets a new PC, I've lost a day because they have all this old junk on their hard drives that mm-hmm. has to be migrated to the new system.
Right.
You know, so that's, I guess, where I'm coming from as far as, like, keep it trimmed down.
Well, and I have to say I agree with you, and I guess I would say that kind of fits in my whole context-sensitive topic. Mm-hmm. You know, at work, I definitely save less. And I also am thinking of it from the perspective of a good user. You know, if a bad user who doesn't have a good file structure doesn't keep all of his data that he wants backed up in one directory. Mm-hmm. Instead, it's scattered all over the place, which is what most of our users do. It's just scattered over there, and they're like, I don't know, I just need it all.
Yeah.
That, if they're saving everything, they just need to go home. Yeah. Because,
but, you know, if you think about it, I mean, in spite of how much some people suck, there's no school you can go to that'll teach you to organize.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, some people have a messy desk, some people have a messy closet, and generally those people that have those probably also have a messy, you know, My Documents on their computer.
I know.
It's tragic.
There's nothing worse than a messy... Actually, the worst thing... This is definitely a side topic, but... a cluttered user's desktop. Like, not their desk, but, like, the Windows desktop.
With, yeah, well, you can't, like, even see 5 billion wallpaper.
Icons and, like, icons on icons and...
Mm-hmm. Not even in folders.
I can't even work on... I mean, it's like an OCD thing for me, almost. I have to... Generally, I have to select all of them, create a new folder...
With the day's
move them date. Into that yes. folder, and then when I'm done, I will restore them.
Yeah, that's tragic. That's a total gross misuse yeah. of computers, you know?
But anyway, to get back on topic... It's. I agree that from one point of view, you know, it depends on who you are whether or not you should keep everything. And mm-hmm. and if you are, you need to make sure that you are faithful to make it organized.
Yeah,
organization is key.
Right.
But based on that, there's kind of this concept to me of local versus remote.
Yes.
And I think we both kind of agree on this.
Yes. And actually, this, and I'll let you keep going.
No, go ahead.
This. The remote issue and the automation of backups actually shoots the biggest hole in my stance on mm-hmm. this. But go ahead.
So a good example of this is people who keep the latest version of a easily downloadable piece of software on their computer, Firefox. You don't need the latest version on your desktop. You don't need it on every machine, everywhere, all over the place. You can download it. If your internet's down, you have bigger problems to deal with than whether or not you can download Firefox.
Your browser's no good anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, that is kind of the crux of it all. But then there's a little bit more to it. Things like, you know, you could keep everything important local and then back up everything. Instead of having your backups be an exact copy of what you currently have,
right.
have it be an archive.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it goes back to the network trust. If people don't trust the network, then they think, I'm not going to be able to get to it.
Right.
You know, but if they think that, oh, yeah, I can always get to my Gmail. And I thought about this about Gmail when I first started using it. It's like, well, what if it's down? What if it's down? Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's almost never down.
Yeah.
You know, so now I trust it.
This is why I don't use something like an internet backup service, because I still don't trust it fully. You know, yeah. if I need to get... Because I do treat backups as kind of an archive. Mm-hmm. So if I need to get to it, it's because I need that file right away.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a couple of different ways to think about it. But another topic on this front is, you know, this isn't necessarily bit pollution on your desktop, but what about, like, old pieces of software? Do you really need Windows 3.1.1 still?
Yeah, or some old Photoshop version.
Right. And there's been a lot of advances on this recently. Like, Steam is a good example of that from the right. Valve software company.
Right.
You know, I bought Counter-Strike years and years ago from the store. I don't even have that copy anymore because I know with Steam I can download it at any time, whenever I want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear you. The thing, too, with... I think with me, one of my problems... And generally, I haven't bought, like, a TerraStation or anything for home backups.
Right.
Because I have two PCs and a couple of laptops here. So usually what I've done is I've just... A couple times a year, I back up one PC to the other PC. Mm-hmm. You know, so... One has the backup of the other. The problem with manual backups like that is I can never be sure what's over there.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, when was that last backup? And should I back up the backup? And what if I'm missing something?
Yeah.
Because it's not an automated solution.
Mm-hmm.
So that being the case, I can't... It goes back to that issue of trust. I can't mm-hmm. trust what that backup is.
Yeah.
So now I back up the backup onto a CD-ROM, and then I back up that CD-ROM.
And then you're just using all, spending all your time backing up data, and that's no good.
Right.
So, I can definitely see that.
You know, it's just one of those things like, you know, do I know for sure what I'm getting rid of and what's mm-hmm. over there? Whereas if I had an automated solution for moving my data somewhere else protected, mm-hmm. then I would never have to worry about it because I know I can tell my automated thing, you know, if I delete something, don't delete it from the backup.
Right.
Leave it there. If I make a new copy, rename the old copy. Mm-hmm. You know, and all of these freeware backups can do stuff like that now.
So. But even in that case, all it takes is getting burned once by those, and then you're back to, is it going to work? And then, if you're making backups of your backups, it's all over. You know, just go home and turn off your computer because...
Right. And really, I don't sweat it because there's nothing on my home system that's really that critical, you know, so... There is that. And then the other thing, you know, it's like you talked about is the issue of local versus remote.
Mm-hmm.
If we had one super solid, perfectly trustworthy remote place to put our files,
mm-hmm.
then it really wouldn't be a problem. Because if it was something like Gmail where it just grew over time, you put files out there, when you migrate to a new PC, it doesn't matter because you're just going to map up that network drive, whatever that is, whether it be a commercial service or something like a storage area network at work. You know, that kind of thing. So, I mean, that would, you know, pretty much, I think the remote, a trustworthy remote destination for data, plus a trustworthy automated backup system probably would save me a lot of worrying about cleaning up.
But even then, you're still going to be deleting stuff like crazy.
Yeah, but that's just my nature.
Yeah, and that's okay. So for me, I guess it's just a matter of, it does take some effort. But I'm okay with that because I know that I can get to everything that I need ever. Mm-hmm. And it does come down to having kind of like what you said, it takes a good, organized, semi-automatic system. You know, you don't want to be taking effort to consider how you're going to place this data in your system every time you have new pieces of data.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's kind of in a generic format. You know, so for example, the pictures thing, if every time I take a new set of pictures, I'm trying to figure out how to save those, that's just not going to work because you're just going to get sick of spending all this time on it. So it has to be a quick thing. And really, I don't think it's that complicated to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's also the matter of just, you know, the context-sensitive idea of make sure what you're backing up really does need to be saved.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, important things like pictures, videos, for me, email, and documents. But then, you know, some random stuff that you thought was funny 10 years ago, you don't need to keep that.
Because it's probably not still as funny.
Yeah, right. And then you are just adding to the bit pollution.
Right. Well, I know I have arguments at work with the management about, you know, well, users just need to clean up and they need to make sure their files are backed up. And it's like, well, that's kind of my job.
Yeah.
You know, and plus, I'm never going to be able to force users to get their act together.
Right, yeah.
So that's kind of a tragedy. But I can't expect everyone to be awesome like me.
That's right. Well, that is the show for this week. I want to thank everybody for listening in, and I want to thank all of our faithful listeners out there who we still never hear from.
The silent majority.
That's right. you know, as always, we do have our website out there. Feel free to send us some feedback at feedback@angryadmins.com or hit us up at the forum, angryadmins.com/forum, and we will continue to faithfully post the show notes with links to the stories to prove that, yes, these stories are true and we didn't just make them up.
Right, because we couldn't make up stuff this horrible.
That's right. So thanks again for listening, and my name is Joe Bibby.
And my name is Ryan Necessary.
Stay angry.